Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 19th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Corey Morowitz, a managing partner with GGHM, a global gaming and hospitality advisory company. For over 40 years, Corey Morowitz has advised gaming, hospitality, and other business clients on operations improvement, market entry and expansion, strategy, and finance. A recognized expert in a wide range of business, finance, operations, and management areas, he has authored numerous articles, studies, and white papers, and has taught multiple continuing education and master's level collegiate courses focused on the gaming and hospitality industry. He spoke with me in the garden of his home in Lynnwood, New Jersey, on the current trends in the gaming industry. Corey, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
You know, we've known each other for a while, and you were always somebody I respected, his views of the industry. And so why don't you give us a bit about your background and how you came together with GGHM and your
sure.
partner's backgrounds as well.
Sure. It's a very long, windy path. I started out in the accounting industry mm-hmm. for many years. I owned an accounting firm. Around 1996, I went back to school, got my MBA, and when I was done, one of my clients actually hired me to be their CFO.
Okay.
Did that for a couple of years, and then started my gaming consulting practice. Mm-hmm. And over the years, through meeting lots of different smart people, I ended up meeting Michael Kim, who gave me the opportunity to sell my accounting practice and merge my gaming consultancy with his company, Global Gaming and Hospitality. And
okay.
the two of us together, along with another partner, John Rikowitz, formed GGH Morowitz, and then brought on a fourth partner
okay.
a couple of years ago, named Rich Baldwin, who I had known for 20 some odd years and had done some work for before he got into mm-hmm. our side of the business. And so it's all evolved into what today we call GGHM.
Okay. So what kind of work do you do? Consulting, but
yeah.
what's your expertise?
So collectively, we're a consulting and advisory mm-hmm. Firm that's focused pretty much 100% on the worldwide gaming industry,
okay.
which could be bricks and mortar, online, sports, anything that, you know, distributed gaming,
sure.
Anything that touches the gaming industry.
Okay.
We work with suppliers, operators, vendors, you know, tech
sure.
side of the business.
So all the members of your organization, and they all have the special sets of expertise.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
so you can you'll do anything basically, right?
Yeah. So we split ourselves up into three areas. Mm-hmm. Myself and my partner, John Rinkowitz, run the analytics mm-hmm. and industry expertise part of the business.
Okay.
We have a capital markets part of the business, so we call it strategic advisory.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Kim and Rich Baldwin run that side of the business.
Okay.
And their backgrounds, as you heard my background, John and I both came up through accounting. Rich was bridges both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
He was the CFO of a public gaming company. He was came up through a big four accounting firm, so he was on the finance side, and then he was in banking for the last 8 years
sure.
before he joined us. So, and then Michael has been on the banking side of the business. Then the third side of our business we call asset management, and everything from where we've invested our own money and operated a casino mm-hmm. to owned and operated, along with private equity, a casino to, you know, helping tribes oversee and manage
sure.
their own gaming operations.
And do you have people coming to you who want to get into the industry?
That happens sometimes.
Yeah,
yeah, we're actually talking to some folks right now who would like to be owners of casinos.
Okay,
it holds an allure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's there's a lot of big casino companies out that are shedding their properties that they don't consider their core assets, and these are small small casinos, usually regional casinos. There's also talk of a big merger in the industry, which will this merged company will have multiple properties in one jurisdiction. They'll have to get rid of them. So
is there an opportunity here for smaller companies to pick up those casinos that are up for sale?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime an asset comes on the market, there are, and if it's a viable asset, mm-hmm. And if it's, you know, not in the strategic portfolio of a larger company or, you know, regulatory issues pop up, yeah, there's capital out there for well thought out mm-hmm. acquisitions like that, for mm-hmm. sure.
So if somebody would come to you like that, you would help them draw up a business plan then for taking over a casino like that?
Sure. So, yeah, we've been on that side of the business. Mm-hmm. We, you know, represented a private equity firm that owned some debt in a casino, and there was an opportunity to take over the casino. We worked alongside and put up some of our own capital
okay.
to make that happen. Mm-hmm. We had a partner who worked 24/7 in the business and yeah. operated the business, helped turn it around. Yeah, so we'll do everything from, you know, helping to craft the strategy for the acquisition, pricing the acquisition, mm-hmm. to due diligence on the asset, you right. know, looking for all the hidden issues that mm-hmm. are bound to crop up.
Sure, right.
And yeah, and then we'll, you know, if the client wants us to be involved on an asset management role, we'll do that as well.
Okay. Can you talk about any of the casinos or companies you've been involved with?
I just want to make sure I don't breach any confidentiality.
Of course, right, right.
I mean, over the years, we've represented, you know, I'm going to say today, we probably do 50% of our business on the tribal side.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, over the years, we've worked with Mohegan Sun in different mm-hmm. capacities, Seminole Hard Rock, mm-hmm. The Pokagon Tribe, Potawatomi's, Cherokee Nation
sure.
Enterprises,
yeah.
you know, in a lot of different capacities,
okay.
doing studies,
sure.
helping with acquisition. You know.
So, in a lot of cases where they're getting rid of these smaller casinos, it becomes a standalone casino. It's not part of a big corporation. Can that kind of casino survive these days without an asset, a connection to a corporate casino
yeah.
company that has many assets?
Well, it always depends, right?
Right.
There's a reason why companies shed certain assets.
Right, yeah.
And it depends. I mean, but, you know, from our own experience, if you have a, you know, if you do the blocking and tackling right,
mm-hmm.
you get that right. I mean, there's always a challenge if you don't have a strong loyalty program and
sure.
that you know, put some limits on it. But if you get the blocking and tackling right, you get the marketing, the loyalty program under control, you manage your staffing and labor to your capacity. Create ways to differentiate yourself in the market. That's
right.
the real key.
Sure, right.
You know, so any, you know, strong management with a good vision and some capital behind them
yeah.
can do wonders
sure,
with
right.
a single property.
Right. So what do you think is the one most important thing to do for a new casino operator when they take over an existing casino?
Again, I'll speak from experience. I think number one is get the accounting right. That's like, you know, we've had experience where you know, sometimes that's just not, you need a good staff that's going to give you good data.
Right.
You got to make sure that you're working from a good set of data. So get the data right, get the analytics correct. I think the first thing you really have to do is understand your position in the marketplace, what your capital capabilities are, and then carve out a position, especially for a smaller non-affiliated casino.
Sure.
You really have to differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to carve that position that allows you to not necessarily go head to head with the other guys in
mm-hmm.
the market. So it depends on the assets that you're taking over. It's market specific. I like to compare it to, you know, I wrote an article years ago about you got to make your clients cry, right? You want them to be emotional.
Right,
you want them to have
sure.
an emotional connection to your business, right? Whatever business it is. And I think that's the key is if you were taking over a casino, how are you going to set yourself up to do that? Get the data right, have the right staff in place, get the talent right, you know, make sure you've got, you know, enough capital to position yourself well. Those are the things you have to do.
Great. So let's talk in general about the bricks and mortars casinos. You know, ever since the pandemic, there's been a great increase in revenue every year. It's still going on. I was talking to Bill Miller of the AGA the other night and he was saying you're very cautiously optimistic, but the facts of the matter is in some markets, particularly here in the Atlantic City region, the revenues of the land-based casinos are flat or even declining a little bit. There are signs that this is going to continue to happen. Should this be a cause of concern for the land-based casino operators?
Certainly. So there's, we track this data. I think 38 markets we track, 22 are down, 16 are up.
Okay.
Markets that are up are, new markets like New Hampshire, Kentucky.
Right.
Markets where there's, new assets that are entering the market. Mm-hmm. Some of the other markets are under pressure, under fire.
Right.
So they should be concerned and they need to, I don't think the bottom is falling out. We've had like three really good years.
Right, sure.
Right. And even if revenues are down 1 or 2%, if that's the case, it's not a great thing. But when you compare that to 2019, you're still in good shape. So it's, at this point you need to be right sizing for the future. You need to make sure you get we've had a big spike in labor costs over the last several years.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that you have the right processes in place. You got the right technology in place to manage through revenue downturns.
Sure, right.
But you got to reset your expectations.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a renewed discussion recently about does online gambling impact the land-based casinos? And, there's some indication when I was talking to Rob Martin Gordon last spring from the Cordish Live Casinos, they actually turned against online gaming in Maryland because they saw that it impacted their sports betting operations in Pennsylvania when they went online, not just retail. So where do you think that's headed? Do you think that's a legitimate concern for the industry?
It's a fascinating study, right? Mm-hmm. So we look at all this data. I mean, the first thing I looked at when trying to study this is what's happened in the retail sector.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you look at retail revenues as an industry, brick and mortar have continued to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And yet online has grown from nothing to somewhere around 16% of total retail revenues across the US.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at the gaming industry, and the gaming industry, is flattened this year, but it's continued to grow since the advent of gaming. You look at individual markets, it's mixed data, right?
Sure.
I was looking at New Jersey today. Gaming revenue has grown from 2000, I looked from 17 to 23. Brick and mortar revenue grew by 2.7%. Online revenue grew, I forget the percentages, but online went from 10% of gaming.
Right.
And then it was growing to about 14 or 15 before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Now online's 40%
right.
of gaming.
Yeah.
Right? That's like more than two times what retail is.
Right.
And then, so to me, gaming revenue kept growing. Online's 40%. In Pennsylvania, it's about 34% today. Gaming revenue has flat in PA.
Right.
But it's almost like a category unto itself, right?
Yeah.
So sure, can you introduce all this new form channels and forms of gaming to consumers, and will it ultimately affect, brick and mortar?
Right.
At some point it has to, right?
Sure.
But it's also, in my mind, created tremendous opportunities for gaming operators, especially if they have omni-channel distribution.
Right? Right.
If they're on the online side and then they're also on the brick and mortar side, that's a good combo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute opportunity. Yeah, I just wanted to mention, we also looked at the movie industry. Right?
Okay.
I'm trying to think like, what's a parallel for gaming and what could happen, right?
Yeah.
So retail, I said, well, yeah, retail, you still got to go try your shoes on, right? So, but in a movie theater, right? You go for the experience.
Right.
And then so now you have all these streaming services, you have all these other channels of distribution. I watch stuff on my phone. I load it up on my phone. I go on a flight.
Right.
I watch six episodes of Better Call Saul. Right.
So
you've got that you're competing with. The movie industry has not come back.
Mm-hmm.
The movie industry was flattening out.
Right.
It was interesting. the number of tickets sold in the movie industry was going down up until 19, but, mm-hmm. but revenues were growing because their pricing was right. going up. Now after COVID, the movie industry has not recovered.
Right.
It hasn't gotten to the 19 levels, but the gaming industry did.
Yeah.
And now you only have 6 states where you really have some comps.
Right. Yeah.
On online.
Sure.
You do have a lot of sports betting. Right.
Right? Yeah.
That's also another category unto mm-hmm. itself. So I would say that it's certainly a challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the brick and mortar business, you should find a way to be in the online business
yeah,
as well
sure.
in some way,
right?
Some way to participate there.
I've noticed, you know, for years I always thought, oh, online game is going to be great. You can, you know, give your players a free night at your hotel and mm-hmm. have that crossover. But I haven't really seen a lot of casinos doing that effectively. Yeah. Is there a reason that hasn't happened? Because are they just solely focused on online gaming and the revenue that comes out of there?
I don't have a lot of data points mm-hmm. on that. I've talked to some guys who say they see, you know, some defection.
Right.
I've talked to plenty of others that say, well, we see a whole bunch of reactivated players and we see a lot of players who never came
right.
to
yeah.
us. So mm-hmm. that's, but when you look at the growth of a market like New Jersey,
right.
where online is now $1.9 billion
right.
and, you know, brick and mortar is 2.8 or 2.9.
Right.
There has to be some cross-pollinization going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just when you look at the total gaming revenue as a percentage of the income of the state.
Sure.
Now, there is a lot of out-of-state revenue that comes into Atlantic City for the brick and mortar side.
Sure.
But there almost has to be. So, you know, again, I don't have any specific data points on who's got what programs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I would think that would be, you know, if you think of who's been winning in the retail side, it's
right.
like, you know, who is able to get mine the online space and send those people into the stores where
sure.
they may do some incremental purchases when they go in there, right? So
right.
it's a natural strategy.
Okay, sure. So online gaming is still kind of in its infancy, obviously. You know, we only have 6 or 7 states
yeah.
in the U.S. that have full online gaming and sports betting. But so you've got the online sports books, you've got online casinos, you've got the social casinos, another huge
yeah.
industry that people underestimate. And now you have things like sweepstakes coming in that are, you know, we don't know whether they're legal yet, but we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you think this is going to evolve?
Yeah. Well, I think first the regulatory, I mean, then what's special about gaming is you have a very
right.
Robust regulatory structure around it.
Right.
It's fragmented because it's state by state, but
right.
it's still, you know, very, very strong regulatory structures. And what you're starting to see is a pushback on some of those obvious sweepstakes, things like that, right?
Right.
So that's the first part, I think. You know, because this is so new, the regulators are getting their hands around it. You're
right.
starting to see them push back on some stuff. That'll come into focus. I think the other thing that you'll see is, like, you know, in other online spaces, electronic spaces, is it takes a while for the industries to shake out.
Mm-hmm.
But you're starting to see it in those, you know, in the online and sports betting spaces. You've got a couple of clear leaders
mm-hmm.
that are emerging.
Right.
We're starting to see a lot of smaller companies exit the space.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, even though it's fragmented because it's state by state, you're starting to see some consolidation, you know, start to take place. So
sure.
I think over time that will happen, you know, in the gaming industry
right.
in the online space.
Do you see any parallel between what's happening with the bricks and mortar casinos and horse racing, for example? I mean, horse racing, you know, is used to be one of the most popular sports in the country, and now there's 3 or 4 tracks that can make money. Other ones are struggling. You think that's going to happen with casinos eventually?
That's a really great question. I think horse racing was probably in decline before gaming really took off,
yeah.
right? It was kind of the fundamentals of that industry were a little bit different.
Right.
They were being, in some ways, impacted by, you know, television. Hopefully this doesn't screw us up, but they were being impacted
yeah.
by, you know, other forms of entertainment.
Right.
And of course, there's lots of other forms of entertainment. I think, you know, the gaming industry has shown it's pretty resilient,
mm-hmm.
and people people like to gamble, and they like to go places, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they want to. They don't want to just be. They don't always want that to be a solitary experience.
Right.
So, I think the horse racing industry a little different. You know, you had 8 decision points over.
Right.
Oh, you know, what was it? 8 races, 9 races.
Right.
I think my parents took me to Aqueduct when I was like 9 years old. And I put $2 on a bet that I that won me about 37 cents.
Yeah.
So that was my that was my conservative nature coming out at 9 years old. But, you know, so, you know, you didn't have the same level of engagement that you have in the casino environment. I don't think that the casino industry will have that same fate. I might look at like the mall industry and say like, what's happened with the shopping mall, right? You know, you need to reinvent these spaces.
Yeah. And the casino experience is more experiential. You know?
Yes.
It's not just sitting down at a slot machine and playing. You get the whole, you know, food and beverage, and if you're staying in a hotel, you know, that should be part of it. And then you think operators should really focus on that, you know?
That's when you talk about how revenues are declining or, you know, flat, you look at, you know, all of these challenges that are popping up. It absolutely comes back to what I said before is, you know, you need to create an emotional connection with your customers.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you think about a couple of businesses that have that emotional connection, Wawa, Buc-ee's, you know, they opened a Buc-ee's in Colorado and it stopped traffic on the interstate because so many people wanted to go there.
Right.
People have these emotional connections with these places because they deliver great, great experience, physical experiences.
Sure.
And you know, that's what the casinos have to do, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And there are ways to do that,
yeah.
you know, to connect with your customer that way.
Yeah.
Whether it's through your, you know, your hosts, your employees, your employee engagement, your physical spaces, the kind of restaurants you have.
Right.
There are plenty of casinos that have won that.
Sure.
Yeah. You
know, well, this leads right into my next question, which is, you know, when I first started in the business, you know, people would come to the casino and leave, and you'd only have a chance to talk to them when they're in the casino. But now, you know, you can, you know, quote unquote, touch your player 24 hours, 7 days a week, you know.
Yeah.
How should they handle that kind of access?
There's certainly an opportunity to leverage that access, right?
Yeah.
You asked before about whether they're able to take an online player and get them to visit a casino, and vice versa. I mean, I think that's, you have to be careful, right? There's got to be balance.
Yeah,
in anything, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want
to overdo it. Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to hear from my cable company except for you know, ever.
Right.
You know, if they're gonna give me some new great services,
right?
So, I think you have to just, there has to be a balance. You can't be in their face all the time, but the opportunity to create, you know, with all of the convergence of all these other forms of entertainment, online gaming, sports betting, everything. There are real opportunities to create. Everybody's chasing this omni-channel distribution, right? So there really are opportunities to create that, consolidated under, you know, one roof, right? And everything to non-gaming, right? Some of the big gaming companies out there have non-gaming hotels opening in non-gaming jurisdictions. So, you know, there's lots of opportunity to consolidate that, you know, and create that connection.
Sure, absolutely. So we're heading into Responsible Gaming Education Month in September, set up by the AGA, a great, great program. Overall, though, how do you think the industry is dealing with responsible gaming?
Well, my experience is, just I sit on a couple of audit committees and compliance committees, is I think that they're taking it very seriously.
Right, yeah.
I really see that. Some of it's a culture shift. Some of it's because it's big companies, you know, and they've got important licenses, and they get it, right? And, you know, and so I think that the industry is really, you know, not just responsible gaming, you know, AML, Know Your Customer. Mm-hmm. They really have embraced and done a great job, from what I've seen personally and upfront, done a great job of taking that seriously and putting programs, processes, procedures in to make sure they're doing it right.
Sure. Yeah. So do you think they're doing it right on the online side? I mean, you know, they're that it's so transparent on the online side. You can see every bet they make and that kind of thing. Is that an important aspect for them?
Yep, I think it's absolutely important. It's you don't know what a you don't necessarily have visibility into a customer, what a customer's doing in other online areas, right?
Sure.
But I know in the areas of know your customer and AML and just looking at patterns of play and stuff, I know that I've seen processes in place to flag that kind of stuff.
Right.
So and I think some of it is like, if it's an operator that has brick and mortar experience, I think they're more attuned to it.
Sure.
And I think but I think it will make its way through the industry.
Yeah. Right, one more question. Do you have any advice for the industry for the upcoming years? I mean, especially when you consider, a possible economic downturn and that kind of thing?
Well, so we've been waiting for a recession for 2 or 3 years.
Right, now, right?
We haven't had one. And we had a short one during COVID,
right,
which was an exogenous event. And so downturns happen.
Yeah.
They've happened many times. I've looked at them over since 1980 when gaming started to grow.
Right.
And, you have winners and losers during recessions. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be impacts. Mm-hmm. They're generally pretty short.
Yeah.
And 8 months to 18 months, you'll see an impact.
Yeah.
But we've looked at data, and there are casinos that increase revenue during recessions, and there are casinos that saw decreases.
Right.
There's always a lot of noise in the data. So I think recessions are an opportunity to get your house in order. Mm-hmm. Like the pandemic was a great opportunity to find out what was not important.
Right.
And a lot of casinos kind of retooled themselves and did a great job of coming out of the gate with much better cost structures.
Right.
So, if there is a recession, we'll get through that, and it's an opportunity, I would say. And those things are generally short-lived.
Yeah.
Right. So don't let that stop, CapEx. I think CapEx, when we look at gaming revenues over time, over a lot of casinos, whoever reports. And, once a casino opens and gets stable and stops investing, it's real hard to grow revenues, right? So I would say if I had any advice, it's like make innovation part of your DNA.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Don't let your operations, don't let your CapEx, flag, right? I mean, you need to keep spending money on these places to keep them relevant. And I'll go back to what I keep saying is create an emotional connection with your customers, because it's a lot harder.
Right.
It's harder in my business, it's harder for everybody to maintain, a strong, sustainable business. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to create a perception and a connection to your customers that makes them want to keep engaging with you. And that's through a combination of, great staff, great, processes, nice properties, and understanding who your customers are.
Sure. Well, that's great advice. So where can people get in touch with GGHM? Your website, email address, something like that?
I think the website is gghmorowitz.com.
Okay.
Pretty sure. I'm Corey at morowitzgaming.com. That was the old name.
Sure.
I just haven't changed my email.
That's great.
But yeah, and we're going to be at G2E. We'll be our partners. We've made a commitment to being in a lot of places.
Great.
So you can see us at G2E at the tribal gaming conferences.
Sure.
IAGA.
Great.
So we'll be at all those places.
We'll check in at G2E for sure, and I'm sure you'll be at ICE in Barcelona next January too.
I love Barcelona, so I hope
there you
so.
Go. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Corey. I appreciate the time you spent with us today, and good luck on the future of the company.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. Thanks.
Great.
Thanks, Rod.
Okay.
Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.